All right. Qualify briefly. At this time, the chairperson should briefly qualify. Requirements for chairing meeting at the Central Orlando Group are Saturday night speakers meeting, our 1 year of continuous sobriety, have Central as your home group, and attend a group conscious meeting. And again, my name is Robin, and I'm definitely an alcoholic. And I've fit those that criteria there. And the reason I'm really an alcoholic is more about alcoholism is my story. I think it might be Suzanne's too. She was laughing at all the stuff in there. But, you know, I came in and out of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I had every reason why I didn't belong here, whether it was I was too young, you guys were a cult, I was too smart, you know, whatever it was. Or it was just about the drinking. If I would quit drinking, then everything would be fine. And I have that experience too of having some time not drinking and then getting an opportunity to drink again. And relapse is not a criteria for here, but I'm grateful for mine because when I came in this time, I was convinced that I belonged. And they read more about alcoholism, and I'd done it all. I didn't switch from scotch to brandy because I didn't like scotch or brandy, but I did the beer and the wine and the exercise and the books and all of that stuff. And in the end, I just drank vodka straight. It was great. But the good news is alcohol kicked my butt, and they told me if God scared me out of AA, alcohol would scare me back, and that's exactly my experience. And I got a sponsor, I worked the steps, and my life changed, and I'm forever grateful for that. And if you're new, just keep coming back. That's what they told me. And when I was at Lou's Lounge, I don't know if any of you ever been there, they weren't asking me to come back, so this was the only place left. So if you feel like that, welcome, you're in the right place. All right, a reminder, the group asked me to remind you to please make sure your phones are off and to refrain from moving around or talking while the speaker is sharing. And now I'm to introduce the speaker. Vanessa, who's been chairing this week, is up in New York, and she asked our speaker to speak. And the speaker is one of her really good friends and also one of mine. And I just want to share that if any of you are here for weight loss, this girl's got the information you need, because that's why she came to Alcoholics Anonymous. So she'll fill you in on that. It's always my favorite story. I'm like, what? You can't lose weight? But anyways, I needed to gain some weight when I got here, and it was like the first year freshman thing, you know? But anyways, I've watched her grow and change, and this program has changed her just like it's changed me, and I'm just so blessed to call her my friend. And with that, I give you Dawn.
Hi, my name is Dawn. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Dawn.
I drank a lot of beer to have to lose weight to come in here. I can just tell you that. I drank my weight and then some in beer. Thank you for letting me do service this evening. For me, an alcoholic wasn't the traditional person that most people think an alcoholic is. I always hear in these rooms it's the person that's, you know, in the trench coat, that's drinking the wine and out of the paper bottle. For me, my thought of an alcoholic was my grandfather. And for me, that life is unmanageable piece of it, if I was like him, I would come into these doors. So that's why it was so tough for me to even admit that I was an alcoholic. So with my genes and my family history, it's tough for me not to be in here. My grandfather was a very, very violent man. Wonderful when he was sober. Very funny. But he used to beat my uncles, my four uncles, and my grandmother. Every time he drank, it was horrible. They'd have to go from town to town to town. And he ended up hanging himself in the county jail because he tried to murder them, actually. And then my dad's side of the family, my great-grandfather was a bootlegger during Prohibition. So I couldn't escape it. We've got Germans and American Indians, and they don't mix well. They like alcohol. So anyhow, so that kind of set things in motion for me. And as a kid, my mom, with that kind of history, understandably, she was ill. And she tried very, very hard to give my brother and myself a normal life. She married my dad, football star, volunteer fireman, great guy. Alcoholic though. And tried to give us this normal life. They would never bring up my grandfather. They'd whisper his name. She would always say he was great. She always remembered the good stuff. But at any rate, she had like 4 nervous breakdowns as a kid for me. And in typical my family style, we didn't talk about it. I would just come home and Dad would say, "Mom's not here," and she's being in a hospital or whatever. And we just didn't talk about it. So she did the best she could, but she wasn't there for my brother and I. And then my dad was emotionally unavailable. Always drank at night, usually about 5 o'clock he'd start. So he functioned and he took care of us well. So that was kind of where my childhood was. And then growing up, my brother was this great guy, always very likable. I was kind of the, kind of an ugly duckling, I would say. My mother was very, very pretty. My grandmother was Rita Hayworth, gorgeous, my dad's mother. And it was always like, "Don't worry, honey, someday you'll grow up and you'll be pretty," is kind of what my dad would say to me all the time, you know. So it is what it is. But I kind of always, because my mom was emotionally unavailable, my father was emotionally unavailable, they just didn't know how to raise these 2 kids. I've always felt different, just always. Socially scared of people, but I knew, or at least my perception was, is that if you were pretty, you got everything. And so that's kind of where I've always, it was like a fantasy world. I grew up kind of watching TV. That's what raised me, MTV, Gilligan's Island, all those things. So anyhow, I grew up, I got through high school without drinking. I kind of grew into something. I would shape myself into what I thought I should be happy. So I was like on a mission from 6th grade on. I've always been very persistent about things. And I was on a mission to be in student council, to be popular, to be cheerleader. And then I learned how to manipulate myself and people into making that mold. And I didn't drink because my mother would always say, "You cannot drink. You cannot drink. It's in your genetics." And I certainly didn't want to be like the man that they used to whisper about. They used to beat my grandmother, beat my uncles, or like my uncles, my God, they were raging alcoholics, and they were terribly mean. And I just didn't want anything to do with it. It was like, alcohol's bad, and boys are bad. So I stayed away from both. And until I was like 16. I stayed away from alcohol for a while. The first time I ever drank, I was 14 years old, and I don't remember any part of it. I just chugged it like it was a Coke. Coca-Cola is what we call them in Texas. I mean, call them soda on the East Coast. But I just chugged it. I don't remember a thing. I just woke up the next day. I was in a trailer park. I was embarrassed. I was throwing up. And a lot of people like to say that the first time they drank, they felt like Superman or whatever. I don't even remember the first time I drank. So I didn't want to do it again. And it would mess up my road to be popular because I was afraid that if I was bad or if people thought different things about me, that I wouldn't get what I wanted. And so I graduated. I ended up graduating high school. I was a good kid. I never got in trouble. I didn't have to. My brother got in trouble enough for both of us. He drank all the time. All the time. But he's very popular. He always got through things. And I just kind of stayed away from it. And then I went to college. And I followed my brother to college. And I've always thought my brother was this, and still do, this amazing person. And I just kind of did whatever he did. So I still have the social phobia thing. I'm still very scared to see people. I live in this very small town my entire life, very safe, protected town. But remember growing up, I wasn't the cutest thing on the planet. And when you grow up in a small town and then you kind of grow into somewhat of an attractive person, people still see that little kid. And so when I got to college, it was like new. They didn't know me. So people looked at me differently. And so when I went up there my freshman year, I kind of was getting whatever I wanted. And that's the first time that had ever happened to me in my life. And the first time I drank, it was during rush week. And I was going to all these different frat parties, and my brothers and I was getting a lot of attention, and this just didn't happen to me. And I decided that I was going to drink because I was an adult now. And now that time, it was fun. And I threw up, and I didn't care. I mean, I had a blast. I felt like, I don't even know how to explain it. Everybody in this room should understand probably that I felt normal for the first time in my life. I could talk to people. I felt comfortable in my own skin, even though I didn't even know anybody. I could dance all of a sudden. I don't know how that happened. I don't know if anybody watched Seinfeld ever in their life, but think about Elaine and her dancing, and it's all me. so embarrassing. So all those things kept, and things just really good kept happening, and I just, it didn't, if it would have been a bad experience like that first time, I probably wouldn't have done it again. But I, for the first time, I felt normal, but I could control it. At that time, I would only drink on Friday nights. I would never go to the weekdays. I just kind of drink beer because the trash can punch didn't agree with me that night, and so I just started going to beer. And I was still making very good grades. I was on the dean's list, yada yada. So then I ended up meeting a boy, of course, and I'd already been dating somebody for a while, and I broke up with him to go with this boy. And that kind of kept me from drinking a whole lot because I would go to visit him in Dallas every weekend, and I still partied and had fun. But then when we broke up, he broke up with me, after a year into it. I made a decision I was going to drink a lot, and I didn't care. And I just remember sitting there thinking, I guess this is where I'm supposed to fall apart. And I did. I stopped eating. And I really drank a lot, and I really turned into this mean, mean little girl. And this was my sophomore year in college, and because all I wanted to do was get back at this person. And I was kind of like a shell. I didn't know, because growing up the way I didn't know what I was supposed to be. I didn't have a lot of values. I just knew what I was supposed to look like, and maybe what I was supposed to act like based on what I look like. I don't even know how to explain that. So at any rate, I really started getting out of control, and it's probably about 90 pounds, and drinking all the time. And this was my sophomore year, and my mom, my sorority sisters were scared, and they called my mom. And this guy that broke up with me actually ended up moving back home, because he just couldn't live without me. No, I'm just kidding. He did move back home, and we tried to get back together, but just kidding. But he moved back home, and we were trying to work it out. So he had called my mom because I was very thin, and my sorority sisters had called my mom because I was very thin, and I was not on the dean's list anymore because I was drinking every night. And they actually ended up on Valentine's Day Baker acting me. It was kind of fun. It was interesting. I tried to crawl out the window. Police were knocking on the door, and I was like, did I not pay a parking ticket or some sort of ticket? And they were coming to get me to take me to a treatment center. And I was really, really, really mad. And, you know, along with this, my parents decided that they were already going to get a divorce when I was in high school, but they lived together for some weird reason. And they decided, my mom decided she was going to move out at that time. And this all happened in the same semester, boyfriend breaking up, parents getting divorced, and I'm going to fall apart, blah, blah, blah. And they took me to a treatment center, and it was for an eating disorder more so than anything. They would ask me not to drink, but I did. I was in college, is my excuse. And so I was in this treatment center for about 60 days. And it was a 90-day program, and they didn't know what to do with me after 60 days. And they put me into an alcohol section of it, and they said in this, they made me go to AA. I was like, yeah, whatever. And I was 21 years old or 20 years old, and I kept hearing them say, if you black out once, you are an alcoholic. And I was like, oh, that sucks. And I was so mad. It just really ruined it. My whole family was like all shot and looked at me. And I was like, look at him, at my brother, because it was like a family thing. Don't look at me, look at him. And so that kind of really started, you know, in the book, Bill says gradually things got worse, as if it could get worse after, you know, you're in treatment center, you're 90 pounds, you're drinking all the time. Well, gradually it did get worse. When I got out, in true form of our family, I just pretended like I went back to school like nothing happened. I didn't say anything to anyone. It was kind of cool, though, because my parents and my sorority sisters, the three that knew, didn't tell anybody where I was. And so I was able to kind of go back in and lie to myself and things are going to be fine, and nobody knew where I was. And I got out of the treatment center. The boyfriend who came back for me that went to the treatment center almost every weekend broke up with me again when we got out. And I was like, well, that was uncool. And I started really, 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 really drinking. And I just went wild. It was like I just went nuts. I don't know what was wrong with me. I didn't care anymore about life or anything, but I was having fun. That's the thing. All I really cared about was having fun. I just wanted to laugh. I wanted to have fun. Every time I started drinking, Vanessa really wants me to tell everybody this, I would take off my clothes and go streaking. I don't know why I would do that. I just thought it was so cool. I mean, I've gone on a date before where I was just slamming trash can punch, and I fell down the stairs on a date and jumped. It was like, I'm okay. That's how I was. It was just like slapstick all the time with me. I was streaking across the golf course once. I opened the car door. It banged me in the mouth, and I had a chipped tooth. That's the hottest thing ever. And that was on a date, too, mind you. I was a really nice girl. So those things just started happening. And as it went along, I was losing kind of friends, if you can imagine. And I was known as this crazy, wild girl. And I just didn't want it to stop because I didn't care. I was having fun. And if you didn't have fun with me, you know what you can do to yourself. So, and if you liked the same boy I liked, you were in a bunch of trouble because I wasn't very nice either. So, somehow I got through college. I graduated. I thought it was a feat because my brother, who's 3 years older than me, we sat beside each other at college. He had a little problem too. And I got to walk across the stage before he did. It was hysterical. So, anyhow, so I graduate college. I go to work. I worked with a bunch of attorneys doing my first job in sales. How I got into sales, I'll never know. Because my dad used to always tell me, you should really do something where, you know, maybe accounting might be good for you. You don't have a very good personality. You shouldn't be selling. God bless him. But, you know, he tried. But so I ended up, I get out in the workforce, and I've totaled several cars kind of along the way. And for some reason, I ended up moving back home with my dad. I'm very glad that I did, because a couple months after I moved home to live with my dad, he wanted me to come home, save some money, this and that. My mother had gotten remarried since, and it was just killing him. He was just dying right in front of me, drinking, smoking, and stuff. And I get this call when I'm at work, and you know immediately when something's wrong. And it said, you need to come to the hospital. Your dad is sick. So I get to the hospital, and they're doing the paddles on him, and he had had a hemorrhagic stroke. And that was, I'm so glad that I stayed there with him. I was there at least to be around him a couple more months before he died, because with a dad like that, who just, it's kind of hard to like him in a way, and but I did love him, and I didn't want to move home. I just felt sorry for him because my mom had divorced him, and he was really sad. So anyway, he has a stroke, and there was no hope, really. We had him on a ventilator for a couple weeks, and I was really drinking a lot, and I wasn't there for him. I didn't care. I mean, I did. I think it was more of a show than anything. It was kind of like, I'm supposed to be upset. I did love him. I just didn't know really how to love people. And I drank, like, every night. It was more so about me. You know, it was like felt like I was having a nervous breakdown, so someone took me to the doctor and gave me Xanax. It was nothing about how can I help or Just, it's despicable, honestly. So, one of my biggest regrets. Anyhow, we took him off the ventilator, and of course he died, and I really got bad after that. Just horrible. He left us a little bit of money from his Bell helicopter thing and his pension, and bought a car and bought a bunch of clothes and I pissed it away, and just started making some horrendous decisions after that. I mean, my drinking was horrible. I drank at work, and I just, my mom wasn't here. She was actually in Florida at the time, and I was still in Dallas. My brother was running crazy. You'd never know where my brother was. They'd always have, they would call them Robbie sightings. And, so sometimes I knew where he was, and sometimes I wasn't. He was in and out of being sober. And in fact, when I moved back home, he had gone into a treatment center. They were more worried about me because I wouldn't eat. And that was my major problem. I had this horrible eating disorder. So Robbie's kind of in and out, and I just didn't have anybody there, and I was very lost. And I get this different job, because I can always kind of on the outside laugh about things and have fun and party and this and that, even though I didn't have any more friends because I was so mean, just so horrible. I just kind of go to the next group. So I didn't have a whole lot of friends, and people were very disposable to me. And so I get this job, and it's in sales on the phone, and it's like a boiler room in there. But the cool thing was is you could drink, and you'd work like 10 in the morning until about 8 o'clock at night, and everybody's in there. I never smoked. I never could pick that habit up. I'm glad I haven't now, but I always tried to do it. It just never worked out for me. I don't know why. But everybody would be drinking or whatever, and you'd have like a two-hour break, and we'd all go and play trivia and get smacked and come back to work and get on the phone and sell. And it was a lot of fun. I was like the only girl out of like 15 guys, and that made it really fun. And I was dating someone at the time. I was actually living with him, and then I see this one guy. It's always a guy. Story of my life. But I see this one guy, and he caught my eye, and he looked so cute and so sweet and so nice. Wow. Was I wrong about this one? I ended up moving out of my boyfriend's. I was actually engaged to him, and it was like in one day, I was like, well, I'm going to go ahead and move out. That just was my motive operandi. I just would pick up and leave whenever I didn't want to be somewhere, and or I'd make you break up with me or not be my friend because I was lacking in courage, complete coward, and I do just horrible things so that you would tell me to go away, and then I could blame it on you. So I move in with this guy immediately, and all the red flags are up. He has one son, I believe, and then a daughter, but he was good looking, so that's really all that matters. And ended up moving in with him. He smoked a lot of pot, but I thought, well, we all did it in college, you know, whatever, he'll grow out of it. And I just always think that I can change people. He ended up, like, after my first year, stalking me a little bit. Like, I'd be working, and he'd have the car sitting outside, and I'd be on the phone, and he'd call, and he'd go, I know you're talking to people. Like, I'm working. That's my job. So it was just weird. So I ended up, it was a horrible relationship, so I decided to marry him. It was brilliant. It was awesome. I can change you. And I was drinking a whole lot, as you can imagine. And but I always wanted that white picket fence thing. And so I was going to, by God, make it happen. So I was always trying to change that because he had the problem and I didn't. He was a big-time drug addict. We're talking some heavy-duty stuff. And it was, that stuff I can put away. I don't care about that. The beer, the whatever, I have to do. So I ended up, we moved down to Austin, Texas. When we got married, I was drinking a lot. He did so many drugs that it was like that equilibrium thing, I would try not to do things because I didn't want to lose my stuff. And he was just, he was out of control. So it made me swing to the other side. Well, and he would kind of go dry and then do it again and dry. And so during a dry period, I thought, well, okay, things are looking up. He's going to live into his potential. And I get pregnant. I was at least married for, you know, first. I was like, I'm doing this right. Married first. And so I get pregnant, and I have my daughter. My daughter is a beautiful little girl, and he's still doing drugs. And I just decided that I can't put my daughter through this. So long story short, my parents had to come get me 5 weeks after she was born, and that's how I landed in Florida. And it was really, really bad. It was like Mission Impossible. So I move here, and because he had such a bad problem, I didn't want to touch anything. Alcohol, none. I wanted to be a good mom. I felt like I had a chance again, so I come to Florida, and I'm behaving. But it's very dry behavior. I'm going to Al-Anon, and I end up getting my life back together, and I get a fabulous job that I still have today. That's just kind of how my life works. I go really bad, and then I get something good, and I think that hasn't helped me, to be honest with you, because I don't hit bottoms. I just have such persistent self-will. I'm going to get this done, that it can hurt me. So at any rate, I get married, and I have another daughter, and I've got a good job, and the itch struck me again. And I just wanted to be normal again. And I took that drink. Probably 5 years I hadn't been drinking. And it was like I was off to the races. It's like nothing changed. And it fell so hard, so fast. I started doing some horrendous things. I wasn't a very good wife. I spent $120,000. I was huge, you know, and I was doing those eating disorder things. I ended up having to go to a therapist, and because I was just so out of control. But the last thing I wanted to be was an alcoholic. You know, I could be an adulteress. I could have a horrendous eating disorder. I could spend $120,000. I could have no friends, but my God, I wouldn't want to be an alcoholic. Those people are crazy. So I'm at my therapist, and I come into the room, and I just said, "What is wrong with me?" And I would ask her for 2 years, "Am I an alcoholic? Not am I an alcoholic?" And she'd say, "I don't know, honey. Yeah, that's up for you to decide. I think you're just fine." One day, I was like, "How did you do this and how did you do that?" Because we were kindred spirits. And she pointed at the wall of Serenity Prayer. And I'd been in these rooms enough to know what the Serenity Prayer was because I was in college and my brother and my whole family. And so I made it to a meeting that night. I knew right there that, okay, this is a problem. And when I came in the rooms, I was very scared. I didn't want this. I came because, quite frankly, I was doing the South Beach diet, and I couldn't get through those 2 weeks of not being able to drink. And I was like, son of a biscuit eater. If I can't, you know, I just wanted to lose 30 pounds. Seriously. And Robin's laughing, but it's the truth. I was like, okay, so I'll go in, and I'll get through those first 2 weeks, and I'll lose the weight, and then I'll kind of drink like a normal person. But when I came in here, it just hit me like a ton of bricks listening to the people. I remember where I was sitting. Suzanne, you were actually at my first meeting. It was right on that wall right there, that last line. And I was like, oh, my God. And I was hearing these things. I felt like I was home. But I was extremely, extremely stubborn about this program. And I didn't want to be an alcoholic. And my first sponsor, I thought she was so mean to me. She'd say things like, go to 3 meetings a week. And you want to be right and you want to be happy. And I was like, I don't know. I think I'd rather be right. For my first year. And I can tell you, I probably didn't know one of these steps. If you quiz me in my first year, I don't think I knew one of these steps, although I was just kind of going through the motions. So I've never been a real risk taker. As crazy as I was in college and doing all that stuff, I knew that I would be okay. Telling the truth was a lot scarier than me than running down a golf course streaking, I can tell you that for sure, because I had built up so many lies. I was just so scared. I couldn't be truthful with anybody, my husband, myself, my family. I felt like I was living a double life, and I continued some really crappy behavior my first year and even a little beyond. And then the pain got so bad that I had to kind of start over again, because I listen to Clancy a lot, and he would be a dry drunk, and then he'd go get drunk again, and he almost wanted to kill himself. And something just stuck out when I was listening to him one day, where he just went to his garage and wanted to just, you know, start the car and die. And they saved, and that hit me like a ton of bricks. And I was like, that's exactly where I'm at. And so I decided to kind of dig in one foot at a time. I wasn't diving in that water because I did not want to clear up the messes that I had made. Just didn't want to. And Robin kept saying, evidence of God, evidence of God. I'm like, okay. You know, and everything, I would just write it down. Just write it down. Any evidence of God. I didn't trust myself. I didn't know who I was. And I just always thought every day I was going to be fired. You know. But walking into this room, honestly, I was about to be fired. And because I kept getting tickets and this and that. Yada, yada. It got painful enough for me to want to work the program. And I got a different sponsor. My first sponsor was fantastic. I needed somebody to do that to me. I went through one more sponsor in between, and then I came to my third and one I have currently, and she's an amazing individual. And I've been able to rework my steps over the past year, and I've made some really tough decisions, stupid ones. I mean, plenty of stupid ones. You know, that boy in college that kept breaking up with me, I decided to make an amends with him on Facebook. Brilliant idea. Smart, very smart. I was sober, too. That's okay, because working those steps and knowing these women, I have learned how to get through things quicker. I've gotten a divorce, and I'm okay. I've made the hard decisions, and I'm okay. I'm learning how to find a God, because one day I was sitting on my floor just bawling, and I couldn't get a hold of Vanessa and anybody and this and that, and I'm calling my sponsor, and she says, girl, if you're not able to do this on your own, what are you going to do when you're by yourself and you can't get a hold of me or Robin or Vanessa? What are you going to do? You need to find God. And that changed my life. And that's when I dug in and really started doing the steps instead of just going through the motions and really wanting to do the amends. When I was in fourth grade, I set my yard on fire. This is horrible. And I set my yard on fire, and the kid that helped me put it out, I was so scared to tell my parents the truth that I said it was him. And I want to find him. I mean, I almost feel like I'm new in sobriety again, because I want to clear all this stuff up. And I just want to be honest with myself and take the risks that it takes to not drink, because I see glimpses of a better person. I see glimpses of happiness. I see glimpses of the normal people that I always wondered, you know, how do you do it? I'd always ask my brother, why are you so happy? How do you do it? Da, 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 da. And he handed me a big book that I put on the shelf. And now I know. Now I know how he did it. And I live this and breathe this every day. You tell me to do a gratitude list, I'm on it. You tell me to help somebody, I'm on it. My first year, year and a half, I didn't want to sponsor people because I didn't feel like I had anything to give, because I wouldn't take any risks. If you don't take any risks, you're not going to be able to give back. I played it kind of safe and didn't tell anybody what was going on, and I'm an open book now. So that's where I stand today. I try to be as honest as I can. I'm on my knees every morning, and I thank God every night, and I actually mean it. And I actually have a higher power. It's incredible. I was able to, like, make amends to my dad, even though it was kind of like in my going through the motion stages, because his best friend was dying. His best friend ever was dying. And my family had been kind of broken after the divorce, and then I'll clear this up when I'm done. But they'd been broken up, and it was my parents' best friends, you know, when they were married, and they kind of went with my dad in the divorce. And he was dying last year of cancer, and I decided I wanted to make an amend to my dad. So I called him, like, every other day for 6 months before he died. And then when I went to the funeral, because I was the only one that could, I stood up and said something on behalf of my dad. And now it's kind of weird. We're going to go see him Monday when we're in Texas. We're going to go see their family, because he did end up passing away. And now my mom is friends with his wife again. And it's like our family's back together. And that's not me. That couldn't have happened without this room. And I was so ashamed of how I used to behave that I didn't want to do it. Now I want to do it. I'm okay with telling people I'm an alcoholic. I don't know how I still have my friends from high school and college, but my best friend from high school sent me this text the other day, and she said, like, she wouldn't speak to me like for 10 years after her wedding. I don't know what I did. Apparently it was bad. But she sent me a text, and we were supposed to go out on Tuesday night for dinner, and she said, I just don't think I can have just one evening with you. Can I see you more? I need more of you. And I couldn't have that without this program. So I'm eternally grateful for all the women here, even the men, I guess. I'm teasing. Everybody's fabulous here, honestly. I feel more at home here than I do anywhere. I feel like this is my family. I feel like I have a second chance of life. I feel like my children have a second chance of life. Can you imagine the mother that I was? Just a complete shell. I don't want them to be shells like me. I want them to have a vibrant, robust, happy life. So that's where I'm at today. So thank you for letting me share.